T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Albert Breer, MMQB, is with us. Albert, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Doing good. This is 7 camps down, I think, so.
Surprised you can keep track.
Yeah, I'm at the point where, like, you know, you wake up and you kind of forget where you are and all that. So it's good, though.
And your old colleague Peter King is here, and he was on with us earlier.
Yeah, a couple of my – I mean, I saw Peter out here. I saw Aditi out here. Yeah, there are a lot of my ex-colleagues out here.
So, Albert, you where have you been so far? You've been 7 places.
Yeah, so I did the first weekend, which was Bears-Ravens, and then I did Patriots-Vikings-Packers-Lions and here.
So let me ask you this, because I was at Pat's camp on Friday just for, like, a second, you know, because with my uncle. And, like, I haven't been to any other
nephew
camps.
Nephew of a legend over here.
Yeah, I haven't been to any other camps, really. How does the Browns camp compare to some other teams when you watch? Do they look like the same? Does it look the speed, the players, the talent?
It doesn't. I mean, like, it's interesting because, you know, you go to certain places and – you see a lot of energy and they're hitting, and then you go other places and it looks like they're more deliberate and they're teaching.
Yeah.
And from what I've seen to this point, it looks more deliberate and teaching. What I have learned is it's hard to correlate any of that to winning.
Right.
You know, I mean, you've got coaches who have won with no one hitting. I mean, Tony Dungy won for a long time in Indianapolis, and they were barely touching each other in practice.
Yeah.
You go to some of Bill Belichick's practices, and it like looks like a game.
Yeah, right.
And so there are different ways to do it. It's hard, I think, to correlate. And you know, the other thing is that you could be in a place the wrong day.
Yeah.
And I haven't really asked those questions yet here.
Sure, yeah.
So I don't know if this is, you know, just more of a teaching session that they're having today and maybe they're hitting another day. But it does look like a little less physical than some of the places that I've been.
Like the Patriots, I mean, I was watching, and I've even talked to some people there, and they're like, yeah, Tom's going to have to carry this team this year.
Yeah.
You know, and they don't look, I'm telling you, they don't look overly talented.
Yeah. And that's losing Malcolm Butler. That's losing Deion Lewis. That's losing Brandon Cooks. That's losing Nate Solder. I mean, there's a lot of talent that walked out the door there, and there are real questions about how they're going to replace it. On top of that, I mean, you got to remember, they're second-year guys. There's not a first-round pick in that class. They're third-year guys. There's not a first-round pick in that class because they gave up one for Cooks and the other one went away for Deflategate. Yeah. And so they've had, like, this deficit of draft picks the last few years, and they need an infusion of 23-, 24-, 25-year-old guys. And the answer's always been there. Well, Brady will carry us through. I mean, Brady is their margin for error.
No doubt. That's
the difference between, like, a good quarterback and a great quarterback. Like, a good quarterback creates margin for error. A great quarterback is your margin for error. That's what Brady is. That's what Rodgers is. And, like, so the question to me isn't, like, is Brady going to fall off a cliff?
Yeah.
It's can he lift the entire team onto his back again as some of the younger players get experience, start to get better? Can he lift the team on his back again? Or at least early in the year, maybe for the whole year, and carry them through?
As crazy as this may sound, Albert, in 10 years, will we look back and say the Patriots should have let Tom Brady go and kept Jimmy Garoppolo?
I think so.
It's not impossible.
Yeah.
I mean, I think part of that has to do with Jimmy's circumstances. Like, I think Jimmy's in a good situation. Like, he has Kyle Shanahan as his head coach.
Yeah.
I think John Lynch knows what he's doing as far as building a healthy organization. They've got a good personnel chief who no one's ever heard of named Adam Peters. Like, I think that there's a good infrastructure in place there. And so Jimmy's in a good situation. And as you guys know, a lot of this boils down to situation. Tom Brady has Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
You know, Peyton Manning has Bill Polian. Like, not saying those guys wouldn't have been pretty good otherwise, but a lot of times a quarterback's reliant on what's around him. And I think he's got a good situation out there in San Francisco. And, I mean, I think Brady's going to be an MVP candidate again in 2018. But do I know that this isn't going to be Brett Favre in 2010? No. None of us know that because we're beyond the point of there being any precedent for what he's doing, you know?
I mean, look how good Peyton Manning was in second to last year of his career and then the last year
of his career. And so you just said there's just no – I mean, with Brady, there's no precedent for what he's doing.
Right.
And so, like, you just don't know. Like, it could – if he falls off this year, like, let's just say hypothetically he were to fall off this year and just be an average quarterback and the Patriots go 8-8.
Yeah.
And the Niners make the playoffs.
Yeah. It's already
– they're going to riot in Boston.
And I think that's why Bill wanted to hold on to Jimmy.
Yeah.
And was overruled.
Yeah. And Albert Breer, Monday morning quarterback with the Bull and the Fox on a Monday afternoon in Berea on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Albert, you talk about people around him. You mentioned, you know, Tom Brady situation, great situation, Colts. You know, here we've had so many young quarterbacks who have failed, and probably a lot, if not all of those cases, it's been their talent, but it's also been the talent around them, the coaching around them, the staff around them. It appears that for the first time in a long time, the Browns have a competent GM. We still got to figure out with the coach. People are very high, certainly, on the coordinators. But clearly, for the first time in a number of years, there is talent on this team. Not, and you don't do it all in one year, but clearly it's better than it's been in a while. Is there enough talent, do you think, on this offense that if Baker Mayfield does play, whether it's week 1, 5, 10, or 12, that there's good enough talent around him for him to succeed?
Yes, and the reason why is because I think part of the way that Dorsey and Hugh built this team over the last 6 months was with Tyrod Taylor in mind. And Tyrod Taylor is at his best when he's playing off of play action, when they're moving him around, which is, like, that's, I believe that's why they almost went overboard on running backs. Drafting Nick Chubb, basically a first rounder, top of the second round, right? Signing Carlos Hyde, paying Duke Johnson. Like, I think that's a big part of why they did what they did in the offseason, is because they wanted to build an offense that was going to run the ball well, which was going to play to Tyrod Taylor's strengths. And I think because you have that in place, if Baker had to play, that means you're putting less on him.
Right.
And so that means you're building an offense that's not going to be asking the quarterback to, you know, throw for 300 yards and three touchdowns every week. And so naturally, I think that's – I think in a very natural way, because they built the team to the guy around the guy that they believe is going to be their starter for the duration of the season, because they built it for Tyrod Taylor – they've sort of set up a situation where I think Baker would be able to step in and be just fine. And look, we've been over this before, right? Like, what he did at Texas Tech in 2013, that was way more out in left field than winning the job here would be. So you can't tell me a guy who was a walk-on and won a job at a Big 12 school as a true freshman at the most important position on the field and was just fine with that, just fine pulling that off. You can't tell me that kid wouldn't be able, as the first overall pick, to come in when he's getting a lot of reps and being prepared to play.
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine a scenario where he wouldn't be able to go out there and be functional right away.
You see his comments today about Cliff Kingsbury?
No, what'd he say?
He ripped him. He said he changed, because he started five games and won. He gets hurt.
Davis Webb comes in.
Yeah, and then they basically treated him like he was
Kingsbury specifically.
No, Kingsbury specifically. Yeah. He said, it was BS. He treated me like I wasn't part of the team anymore. And then at the end of the year, they didn't offer him a scholarship. And he chose to go there and be a preferred walk-on. He went 5-0.
Right.
And how do you not give a quarterback who went 5-0 at least a scholarship?
Right.
And so he bounced and went to Oklahoma. So he was
how impressive is that, though?
Oh,
like, as a walk-on, winning the starting quarterback job as a true freshman walk-on.
I wonder how often that's happened.
I don't think it had ever happened. I don't think it had ever happened before in major college football. If I remember right, you can look this up.
Yeah.
But I think when there were stories came out that he was going to start the opener there, I think a few people wrote, like, this is the first time this has ever happened in major college football.
That shows on Fox Sports 1 all the way up. It's like a documentary of what has been going. I've seen clips. It's pretty cool. I mean, it's some good behind-the-scenes stuff on Baker. And, I mean, you understand why Baker is the way he is and why he ticks a certain way. The guy's always had a chip on his shoulder.
Yep.
I mean, ever since he was in high school, there's a clip they show when he like goes into a varsity game as a sophomore, and it was like their rival, and he wasn't supposed to play, and the starting quarterback gets injured, and he ran for like 200 yards and passed for like 300 yards.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy is always just happened for him.
And I think there's something to be said for that too. I think Sam Darnold was like this too. Like, there's something to be said for kids who. And I think we've all – maybe you're one of them, Dustin. You grow up with some kids, and there's some kids who just athletically know how to figure it out. You know, like, they get out into the field, and they just know how to figure it out.
Sam Darnold's a great example of that. He was a high school linebacker as a sophomore, and he wound up playing quarterback. He's still very young as a quarterback. You throw him out there at USC, he went out and figured it out, even though technically he's not, like, all the way there yet.
Right.
Like, he went out and figured it out. And I think Baker's one of those kids, too, where it's just – you can tell athletically he doesn't run 4-5. Like, and he can't throw it as hard as Josh Allen can. But, like, you put him out on a field and, like, just the spatial awareness, it's just the idea of everything that's around him, having a knack for timing, like – they're just kids who athletically know how to figure it out, and I think Baker's very much one of those.
Had he been 3 inches taller, was he a unanimous number one choice?
So I had somebody in this building behind us tell me in April, and this was before we knew that Baker was going to be the number one pick.
Yeah.
I had somebody in this building tell me, if Baker were 6'4", we wouldn't even be having a discussion.
Right.
That's the way they felt. And, you know, it's the same thing. I remember Pete Carroll saying something very, very similar to me about Russell Wilson in 2012. And they took him in the third round. They obviously, but he said, you know, based on what I've seen, having worked with him in practice, this is before he started a game for Seattle, but said, you know, I believe he would have been right there with Andrew Luck and Robert Griffin at the top of the 12 draft if he was 6'4". And, yeah, I think Baker's very much that player where if he was 6'4 or 6'5", I don't think we'd be asking these questions.
Where would the Browns be right now if they'd taken Russell Wilson instead of Trent Richardson?
And Brandon Weeden.
And Brandon Weed, right?
Brandon Weed.
And what's his face? Justin Gilbert. That's another one.
There are lots of bodies in that graveyard.
Top 10 picks.
What are you going to do?
Albert, any clarity on Josh Gordon?
I would be, like, anyone who's out there thinking they one way or the other, I would just be careful about drawing any sort of conclusions on this or making any assumptions because I think the league is being understanding of him. I think one of the bigger questions is about communication and how he was communicating with the team and how I think there were some people in the building that were pretty surprised when they saw what happened last Monday. Yeah. So I think there are some questions there. You obviously have the maturity questions with him. Mm-hmm. I think the people here want what's best for him. I would just be really, really careful about making any sort of assumption that he didn't mess up. And if I'm the Browns, if you weren't doing this already and you should have been doing this already, you have to build with the idea that the guy is just having the guy is a bonus.
Right, yeah.
Like whatever you get from him is a bonus. You've got like the temptation is, and this is the problem with guys who have that sort of talent, I think, and bring all the baggage. And coaches will tell you about this. The problem is when you take a risk on a guy like that, he's naturally going to be the best player on the field, and you're naturally going to build around him, right? Like, you have to resist that. Like, so the Browns have to build an offense as if their receivers are going to be Jarvis Landry, Corey Coleman, no Josh Gordon.
Right.
So I think that's the important part of it now. And, you know, obviously they don't have any choice at this point.
But, you know, there were reports at the end of last week that they were talking to Dez Bryant, and we kind of put the connection between Dez Bryant and maybe thoughts about Josh Gordon. And in a way, if you're signing Dez Bryant, if they do, as a reaction to Josh Gordon, then you did already what they shouldn't have done is they were relying on him, which they couldn't have.
Right. And I don't know what Dez is going to bring to the table right now.
Yeah.
I know what the Cowboys thought, which was that he is close to being cooked.
Yeah.
And you've seen them allude to it, and Dez blows up every time they say anything about it. But, you know,
does his Twitter rants affect him being signed or no?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, when he was going for 1,400 yards.
Different story.
You know, it's worth it. You know, there's that whole sliding scale. Is a guy worth the trouble? And I think, you know, Dez got to the point where, you know, okay, he's worth the trouble. He's worth the trouble. He's worth the trouble. And then – you know, the level of play starts going down a little bit. Now, all of a sudden, he's not worth the trouble anymore. And I think I think it's every team, but I do think there are some teams that are like, you know, we don't need the drama that potentially could come if we sign the guy. We'll just bring this street free agent in over here. Now, circumstances can change when guys get hurt and everything else. And obviously, the Browns have one of those situations where they lose a guy before camp even starts.
We're talking with Albert Breer, MMQB. When we come back, we'll spend another segment with Albert. Albert, you know, do you think, like, you know, we were talking with Peter King earlier, and he talked about how it like, drives him crazy, like, that there's, it's that football has basically become a 12-month-a-year job. That like he wants a little break in June and early July because there's really no stories, but we're always creating stories. To that,
it's our business,
right? It is right. But to that point, have we gotten to the point in general where we make too big a deal of every throw in practice, the analyzation of it all? Is it too much, or is it right on?
Well, it's the league's fault. I mean, like, that's what they wanted. You know, I think the interesting thing about it is if you want to look at the way the NFL has run over the last 10 years, I think they reached a point where they felt like they were at saturation domestically as far as how they could grow. So they couldn't grow up anymore. So what do you do when you can't grow up? You grow out.
Yeah.
And so that meant adding inventory. That's London. That's going back to L.A. That's Thursday Night Football. That's adding all these things that didn't exist before to try to generate revenue, try to bring attention to football. And so I think everything that you're seeing in the spring and the summer, the coverage you're seeing in the spring and the summer, making mini camp, freaking mini camp in the spring, an event. Putting stands up for training camp, putting training camp on TV.
Right.
It's a way of just creating inventory. Now, the question becomes when's too much.
Right.
But there's plenty of stuff for us to cover that's relevant. I mean, look, the draft's relevant.
Sure.
The free agency's relevant. And then when we get to the spring, I feel like, you know, you've put so much attention on the draft. Now you want to see how the draft picks look. Well, your first look at them is going to be in the spring. And so there's stuff there that we can do. We can argue until we turn blue in the face about how important any of that stuff is, but it's there.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that has been talked about, I haven't heard as much lately, but I wonder maybe the next CBA, you know, four preseason games seems so stupid. It does to me at least.
Yeah.
You know, most of the regulars are barely playing outside of the third game anyway.
Yep.
Are we going to get to a point where we go to two preseason, 18 regular season? Is that going to ever happen?
I think the owners would like to.
Yeah. You make more money.
You'd have to
offer every player a raise. Wouldn't you have to give like an 8% raise?
Well, I think some of that would happen naturally because they get a cut of the revenue.
Right. Okay.
So that would happen naturally. I think you're going to have a hard time convincing football players to add regular season games to the schedule. And the main reason why is because I think every one of these guys, rightfully so, views them like I have a certain amount of mileage in my body.
Right.
And so you have to make it to milestones, right? Like you become a vested veteran at 4 years. Okay.
Right.
So that changes your benefits, how they're going to, like your post-career stuff, all that's going to play into it. Well, now instead of it taking 64 games for me to get there, and I'm going to screw up the math here, it'll take 72 games for me to get there, right?
Maybe make it 3 years.
Right.
That's part of the thing. Yeah.
So now if I'm going to get to free agency, it's going to take me 72 games instead of 64 games.
Right.
And that's 8 more opportunities to get hurt. So what's the get back there? Do you make it easier for players to get to free agency? Can they get to free agency after 3? Are you going to vest them after 3? It's just I think football players are right to look at it this way.
Yeah.
I have a certain amount of miles on my body. And if you're going to add 2 games, you're going to make it tougher for me to get to certain milestones. And I need a significant give back. And I just don't know that the owners are ever going to do that. And so, look, maybe there'd be a way to do it. I think most players look at it and say, I want to play for as long as I possibly can. And we're not even talking about the cumulative effect
of
playing an 18-game schedule versus – or playing potentially as many as 22 regular season games, or 22 games total if you include a 4-game playoff run, right?
Right, right, yeah.
It's just, I understand why players are resistant to it, and I think it would take a very, very significant give back for the players to bend on that.
The new rule, players, this targeting rule, the players are really angry about it. It seems like it's a potential disaster here.
I know coaches are bracing for it to be a mess.
Yeah. Like, if we see a million penalties in the preseason, is there a chance they adjust this on the fly?
Yeah, you know what the biggest problem is? So, you guys know when they made all scoring plays reviewable, right?
Sure.
And so, I think what we saw, the actual effect of it was refs started calling anything that was close to a touchdown. Because you know what?
We can review it.
Yeah. But it's going to get reviewed. So, at the very least, I'm giving myself that backstop. So, if it's close, touchdown.
Right, right.
And I think you might see something similar here where the officials are afraid.
So it is reviewable.
The officials are afraid of, yeah, I mean, all of them. It's like it's targeting in college.
Right,
like
right.
And we've seen – and here's the other problem with that is then that's going to slow down the pace of the game. So now you're going to have the flag thrown, and you're going to say, you know, this is – you know, the guy's out of here, and then they're going to go to the review, and that's going to mess with the base of the game. So I just think, like, there's some unintended consequences here. Now – I will say this. I think one thing that people are missing a little bit is that it's not every one of these penalties that's going to be an ejection. There's some are going to be 15 yards,
right,
and some are going to be an ejection. I think where the real problem is, it's not going to be throwing the flag. I think it's going to be separating what's 15 yards from what's an ejection, and I think that's where it's going to get really messy.
Albert Breer, MMQB. Let's talk about the division a little bit. Steelers, Ravens, Bengals.
Yep.
I know you haven't been to each camp, but give me a little thoughts on each team there.
Yeah, I think the Steelers, you know, you always feel like there's a little bit of a powder keg. Bell's not there. Antonio Brown's Antonio Brown. Ben's got a new offensive coordinator, but there is talent there. There is still a talent and ability there. And part of their model has always been this, which is we bring in talent, we're going to get a head coach who can manage personalities, what Cara was, what Tomlin is. And so I think in the end, they're going to be there. Like, you're going to see them, I think, with double-digit wins and contending for a playoff spot. The Ravens, so much is going to depend on, like, their young players coming along. And it's hard not to look at them and say, okay, you got a GM outgoing in Ozzie Newsome and a new one coming in Eric DaCosta. You've got a quarterback in Joe Flacco who now just had a first-rounder drafted behind him in Lamar Jackson. You've got 29 players over the last that were drafted over the last 3 years. They had 30 draft picks over the last 3 years. 29 of those players are still on the team. And then you've got aging players like Jimmy Smith and Terrell Suggs. And so if the Ravens are going to compete, they're going to need a lot of those young players. Marlon Humphrey, Tim Williams, Matt Judon. They're going to need a lot of those young players to emerge and become really, really good. And if that happens, I think that they're in good shape elsewhere, but they need like at least a handful, like with what happened with the Saints last year. You know, where you had Kamara and you had Ramchick and you had
Lattimore.
Marcus Williams and you had Marshawn Lattimore, and all of a sudden now like that went from a team that like looked like a little bit of a mess a year ago to now they look like one of the more talented teams in the league. The Ravens just need like a handful of their young guys to step forward. And then the Bengals, we talked about a few minutes ago, it's the offensive line. Like Cordy Glenn, Billy Price, I think the biggest difference between the last two teams and the five teams before that that went to the playoffs was they were really solid in the offensive line. They lose Whitworth, they lose Zeitler, and they've just – I mean, I think it's forced Dalton to play a different way, and I think it's a big reason why Dalton's not the same player. And if Dalton's not the same player, then Green's not the same player. And it's just – I think it's sort of trickled down and affected everything. And so – the Bengals can compete if they can get the offensive line sorted out, and so much of that is going to come down to how quickly Billy Price is ready and what version of Cordy Glenn they get.
When you look at the AFC as a whole, I mean, really, like the only teams you can count on being in the playoffs are the Patriots and the Steelers, right?
Yeah,
and then
both those teams have, like, significant drama.
Yeah,
if you look at it, and you rank the top 10 teams in the NFL, I mean, you can make an argument that eight are in the NFC.
No doubt.
Right?
Who's the third best team in the AFC? Like, I guess Jacksonville, but like with that quarterback situation, are you sure that
Chargers,
like every year six teams don't make the playoffs that make it the year before?
Chargers, Texans,
right.
Like, and you look at the NFC and it's like you can, you know, Eagles and Cowboys in the East. In the North, you've got the Packers and the Vikings and the Lions.
Yeah,
have had winning records the last 2 years.
The South is loaded.
Yeah, the South is loaded.
Yeah,
and then in the West, you've got the Rams and the Niners, and the Seahawks are going to dip. But are they going to be bad?
No, not with Russell Wilson.
Like, so how many teams do you have in the NFC where you legitimately say they could make the playoffs? I mean, I'll just tell you this: good teams are going to miss the playoffs in the NFC.
Yeah,
and you're going to have an average team or two that's going to make the playoffs in the AFC.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, look, last year we had Tennessee and Buffalo. I mean, how good were those teams,
right,
really?
Right.
And now, you know, obviously Buffalo, we don't know what they're going to
do. Maybe that door swings open for the Browns.
I think they can win six games this year, Albert. And to me, that would be a pretty great accomplishment considering they've won four in the last 3 years.
If they can get to six wins, that's a.
That would be huge.
Great step forward. Great step forward.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people, I think, get carried away with expectations.
Yep.
I think this idea that, well, Tyrod Taylor got the Bills to the playoffs last year, so he could do it with the Browns too.
Yeah.
I think that's overstepping a little your expectations.
Yep. Yep. And I look, there's a reason why the Bills walked away from Tyrod. There's a reason
that's
why
right.
they walked away from Tyrod. I mean, I think he'd be a good functional quarterback.
Yeah.
There's questions about him in the dropback game. There's questions about his accuracy over the middle of the field. There are reasons why the Bills walked away from him. They haven't gotten that position right since they had Jim Kelly.
Yeah.
And they had a group that put together a playoff team for the first time in almost two decades.
Right.
And they willingly walked away from him.
In fact, in the middle of that season, they benched him for Nathan Peterman. It was upset.
Right. Well, that's why I said to you guys, the best-case scenario for the Browns, the best-case scenario for the Browns is that Baker blows everybody's doors off over the next month, and now you got a decision to make.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, remember, right? Carson Wentz wasn't going to start. All of a sudden, the Vikings get a quarterback injury.
He was third string.
Vikings have a quarterback injury. They get a first-round pick.
Yep.
For Sam Bradford, and the rest is history.
Yep. And Carson looked great.
And he looked great right away. And he looked better, even better, his second year.
Right.
Until he got
right.
hurt. All right, Albert. Great stuff, man. We appreciate
your
time. Thanks for joining us.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.